Welcome to the Friday Night Clive podcast with me, Clive Payne. In this podcast, we look back at the amazing charities, organisations and people we have chatted to over the past few months, all of whom have interesting and important stories to tell. Now, would you be surprised to hear that we produce wine in the UK and more specifically in England? Well, what wines are available? Where are they produced? How many vineyards do we have in England? And do we have any here in the Black Country? Joining me on the line is Julia Tristram-Eve, who's head of marketing at Wines GB, to talk more about this. Good evening, Julia.
Hello there, Clive. Evening to you.
Thank you very much for joining me this evening. First of all, tell me about the organisation Wines of Great Britain.
Yeah, absolutely. So Wines of Great Britain, or Wine GB, is the trade association, the industry body for the growers and the producers in the United Kingdom. And at the moment, we've got vineyards in England, in Wales, and even some in Scotland. So we cover the whole country. And our job really is to look after all of those that are either involved in growing grapes or making wine, selling wine, all of that. And we're here to help support them with marketing, but also to knock on the doors of government to, tell them what a fantastic industry this is, and to help with education and obviously with advice on growing and production as well. So we're the industry body.
How long have we been producing wine in this country then, Julia? Because I struggle to find it on the shelves in the supermarket, and I see lots of wines from different countries, but clearly I'm assuming that we've produced it for a long time.
Well, actually, Clive, you're absolutely right. We've been producing wines in England really going back since the Roman times, because there is evidence that the Romans brought the vine over to England. Wherever they went, they planted vines. And, so there have been vineyards really since the Roman times. There have been a few gaps, I hasten to add. Mm. But actually, if you're looking at the modern English wine industry, so where we are today, the sort of first of the modern commercial vineyards were planted just after the Second World War, so sort of early 1950s. But really, it's the last sort of, 10, 20, 30 years where we've seen, almost an explosion in what's going on. And it's been fascinating to see. And you raise a really interesting point about where you can find these wines. Actually, they're a lot more available than we think. But we don't produce the same kind of volumes that you'd expect, that you expect to see from, say, Australia, New Zealand, France, Italy. But they're there, and it's wonderful to see how many retailers are getting behind it.
Where the supermarkets are concerned, what more do you think could be done by the industry to encourage the supermarkets to merchandise English wine over, wines from other countries?
Well, there are some supermarkets actually that are doing just that. So supermarkets like Waitrose, they've actually got behind British products a lot over the last few years. And if you go to, it depends obviously on where you are, and in some areas where perhaps there are more vineyards planted, you're going to see a little bit more of a push on English wines. In some other branches, there will be some English wines. Like I say, you sometimes have to ask them and look for them. But you actually also see them in other supermarkets like Aldi and Tesco's and Sainsbury's. A lot of them now are producing their own label English wines, both still and sparkling, which is exciting to see.
So that's something certainly to look out for. Now, take me on a journey, if you will, across Great Britain. Where are the vineyards in our country? And do we have any local here in the West Midlands or even in the Black Country?
Well, I'm very pleased to say there certainly are. In fact, we've got vineyards now in pretty much every single country in England and in many of the areas of Wales as well. So it's really exciting to see. But the main, I suppose, if you're talking the sort of largest volume, both in terms of what's planted and the number of vineyards, it's actually in the south of the country. So the southeast right across through to the southwest. But as I say, it's been fantastic to see vineyards creeping up through the country. There are some lovely vineyards. In fact, there's one very big commercial vineyard in Staffordshire, Hapney Green, which I'm sure a number of people will know.
Yes, not far from here.
You've got one or two others across into Shropshire on the Welsh-Shropshire border. There's a really nice lot of vineyards actually down in Herefordshire and Worcestershire. And actually, if you're going to the east, you've got wines sort of spreading into sort of Nottinghamshire, going up into Yorkshire. In fact, there's a Yorkshire wine trail that's just been launched, ready for English Wine Week. So, wherever you look, there are hopefully going to be more and more vineyards.
A few years ago, I went to a vineyard in South Gloucestershire on a guided tour, and we walked around the vineyard itself. And then once we'd sort of understood and were shown how the process works, we were then taken to one of their buildings where they'd got various different wines, and they were asking us to try them with a piece of cheese and then a piece of Christmas cake, but without the icing and marzipan. And there was such a marked difference in flavour, depending on what the food that we eat. But do we use different types of grapes here, or what variety of grapes do we use? Are they conducive to our climate, or would we use a variety here that would be, grown, say, in the south of France, for the sake of argument?
Well, that's a really interesting question, because, of course, England is a very different climate to the south of France. So, and we're a lot further north. We're a much cooler climate, by and large. So therefore, we need to grow grapes that are suitable to the climate that we have here. So a lot of the grapes that were grown originated from Germany, which is not dissimilar, as you can imagine, in climate. But actually, we have noticed, with global warming, that actually the temperatures have been slowly creeping up. So actually what we've found in the last sort of 20, 30 years, particularly in the south, that our wineries, our vineyards, have been planting more and more Chardonnay, Pinot Noir, which is a red grape variety from Burgundy, Pinot Meunier. We've got one or two other sort of French varieties that are actually working very well over here. And really where the big success story was a number of years ago was producing sparkling wines, because actually the very southeast of England is not dissimilar at all to Champagne as a region. Mm-hmm. Champagne is actually also quite a cool climate. So we really started making the headlines about 20, 30 years ago by producing sparkling wines made from exactly the same grape varieties, grown on not dissimilar soil, and using exactly the same method of production. But I think what's been really exciting is in other parts of the country, where perhaps those more familiar grape varieties won't necessarily grow quite so well, these other varieties actually lend themselves so beautifully. And I have to say, it's Friday night, I have cracked open a small bottle to celebrate English Wine Week starting tomorrow, and I've got a glass of Staffordshire wine made from a number of these more Germanic, very aromatic varieties. So you get something that's lovely, light, crisp, fresh, nice and fruity. And actually, one thing I was going to say, we're very lucky actually having this cool climate. I know some of us might question that from time to time, but if you think of some of the best fruits that are grown, I think, in the world are in the UK. That's raspberries and strawberries and the like. And the very good reason for that is because we have wonderful levels of acidity, as well as the sugars and the lovely fruit flavours. And exactly the same comes out in our grapes as well. And then, of course, it transposes itself into our wines.
Now, I'm quite envious of you, in fact, drinking your wine, because all I can muster is a sports bottle of good old tap water, I'm afraid, this evening in here. So I am quite envious of you. But, as you allude to about the changes in our climate, and our summers are getting hotter and they're getting drier, what plans are in place for reviewing the types of grapes that we grow here? Because if the climate's going to get warmer, which it seems to be, do we not review that and then grow the right type of grapes?
Well, I think we've been sort of slowly seeing it. In fact, the grapevine is a fairly slow maturing plant, if you like. If you plant you can have vines that last about sort of 30, 40 years, really, before
really?
You perhaps need to replace them. Oh, absolutely.
Oh, gosh.
Yes. No, they lend themselves very nicely to aging well. And in fact, actually, the longer a vine is in the ground within that time frame, certainly sort of 20 to 30 years, the better quality the fruit and all the rest of it, because the roots are going to sort of delve right down into the soil and get all the nutrients. So it's quite a long-term thing. So if you're thinking of planting a vineyard, you've got to play the long game. Mm-hmm. I was talking about the Chardonnays, the Pinot Noirs, the Champagne varieties, slowly emerging. In fact, they now occupy something like 75% of everything that we grow here. But actually, these other lovely varieties, I think what climate change has been doing, or global warming slightly, the slightly warmer temperatures, it's actually helping to ripen those grapes a little bit more. And I'll tell you what's been really exciting to see in the last few, last couple of decades, is actually also the talent in winemaking. Because, you can make bad wine out of good fruit. You can't make good wine out of bad fruit. So you've got to have that wonderful partnership of good grapes, grown well, ripened well, and then made into wine. And I can tell you what, there are some fantastic wines out there now.
What part of the year would you say is best for harvesting grapes, and how long does the process take from that point of harvest to the wine being available to drink?
Well, it depends what you're producing. Mm-hmm. So if we talk about still wine, and there's quite a lot of still wine grown out there.
What's still wine? Do you mean as in non-fizzy?
As in non-fizzy.
Right,
exactly,
I understand.
That, yes. So you'll expect to get grapes starting to harvest. It depends on the year, of course, but any time from sort of late September through to kind of mid-October. And it depends on the grape variety that you're growing, and it depends on the location. So the further north you are, you're probably more likely to be harvesting a bit later. Mm-hmm. We've had some years, and of course, you know, last year and actually a couple of years before then, when we've had some really lovely summers, some people were harvesting in at the end of August, beginning of September. But generally speaking, it'll be sort of September through to October. And if you're producing a still wine, you can possibly start drinking those wines the following spring. Now, if you're producing sparkling wine, particularly if it's in the same method as champagne, it takes a lot longer. So you're talking probably 3 years after that. So,
oh, crumbs, that's quite a bit longer then.
Yeah, oh, yes, it can, absolutely, yeah. If you're planning to plant a vineyard, you need about 3-4 years before you get a lot of fruit from your vine to make your wine. It's 5 years, therefore, if you're going to be producing just a nice bottle of still wine, but it's a good 8 years before your first sparkling wine is ready to drink and ready to sell.
So sparkling is grape specific then?
Sorry?
So sparkling wine is a different type of grape. It's grape specific then, hence that elongation of process.
It's the method of production rather than the grape. Mm-hmm. Yes, so what you're doing, particularly with the champagnes and the same method. What you will do is you will actually ferment the wines twice. So you'll make the wine as per normal, but then you'll actually add in a little bit of extra sugar in order to accelerate a little bit more fermentation in the bottle. And it's that whole process that takes a little bit of time, but it allows for the wine to grow in complexity and lots of lovely flavors. So it's well worth looking out for English sparkling wines.
What would you compare English wine with? What other varieties and types would you say?
I like to think that we've actually got our own unique styles, actually. But the lighter, fresher, fruitier styles of wine that we produce around the country, some people have likened. We have a wonderful grape variety, very aptly called Bacchus, which is it's of Germanic origin, but it's got this wonderful aromatic flavors. And some people have compared that to, say, a New Zealand Sauvignon Blanc. It's quite hard sometimes to compare it directly to a wine from another country, in the same way that it's probably quite hard to compare, say, a French wine to, you know, a German wine. I suppose perhaps where there have been the greatest comparisons drawn is when we're talking about our traditional method sparkling wines, because they're using exactly the same varieties and the same method of production. A lot of people have been comparing that to champagne. But again, I like to think, you know, we've got our own unique slant on it.
Remind me again of the types of wines that are produced here. So if we're out in the supermarket or you know, a small artisan retailer, what sort of things could we be looking out for?
Well, the lovely thing is we've actually got a really great range of wines now, and this is what the retailers are showcasing so well. So you will find sparkling wines, because there are more sparkling wines available on the market because we produce more of them. But it's definitely worth looking for the still dry whites, and those are going to be nice and aromatic. And I mentioned before, some of the supermarkets do their own labels, so it's worth looking for. Look for the word English or Welsh, actually, because if you're close to the border, you might well pick up some fantastic Welsh wines as well. We produce rosé wine, of course, rosé, very popular at this time of year, and we're producing some lovely rosés. Not quite so easy to find are our reds. Now, reds quite often need a little bit more intense heat and sunshine, and you've got to be very selective, shall I say, with the grape varieties that you use. Mm-hmm. But we grow the grape varieties that can cope with our climate, so you'll expect to get probably a lighter, fruitier style of red. So think more kind of Beaujolais, than something really rich and heavy like an Australian Shiraz. But people love that style. And, of course, we've got all manner of sparkling whites and rosés. If you're lucky, you might find a sparkling red, but you're probably more likely to get those from the vineyards. And, of course, you mentioned the retailers, and we're very lucky, supermarkets and independent retailers, and of course online, will increasingly sell English wine and do have a look on their lists and online. But actually, of course, we've got one big advantage over all other countries, and that's you can visit the vineyards here too.
And as I say, I have done that, and that's a great way to spend an afternoon. Now, obviously, if we're buying homemade wines, then we're reducing our air miles, we're reducing our carbon footprint. How do they compare in price with wines from other countries?
Well, again, it depends what you're comparing it to. So the sparkling wines will probably come in at around about £15-16, and then go up to the sort of the premium prices that you'd expect to find in champagne. But I will say that actually a lot of these wines are going into competitions with wines from around the world of the equivalent price. In fact, sometimes they come in a bit more expensive than English wines, and they're beating them, and they're getting fantastic trophies and awards, which is brilliant to see. Our English still wines will probably start around about £10-12 and go up. So I think you're talking more your single estate wines that you're going to find if you travel to France or you travel to Italy or places like that. So you're not going to get cheap English wines, but what you are buying into is something that's locally produced, that's got all that wonderful craft and passion wrapped into it, exactly as you probably expect to see if you go and visit a vineyard abroad.
And not laden with chemicals as well, which is also key. Now, do we make organic wine here, Julia?
Well, do you know what we do? And actually, it's a growing area, in fact. It's only about 10% of all the vineyard, of all the hectarage, all the acreage that's planted, but it's definitely growing. So there are around about 49-50 vineyards that are now growing organically or even biodynamically. And one thing we noticed, it was interesting that you said about reducing the carbon footprint and the air miles and food miles and wine miles and whatever. Mm-hmm. One thing we noticed last year, when of course we were all very much locked down, is a lot of vineyards reported, and indeed retailers reported, just how much more of their wines, English wines, were being sold. And I think a lot of people really turned to, local British produce and supported it. And that did no end of good, as you say, for the environment and the wine miles and the food miles side.
Now, you mentioned Worcestershire. I live in Worcestershire. If I wanted to start up a vineyard of my own, which I don't have anywhere near enough land in order to do that, but hypothetically, let's say I wanted to do that, who governs the quality of English wine, and how would I go about setting up that vineyard? What regulatory processes are there in place?
Sure. Well, the most important thing is actually if you're inspired to plant a vineyard, we always say do your homework, because not necessarily every site is suitable for planting grapes. It could be about the soil. It could be actually exposure to, say, the wind or frost and things like that. So it's always worth investing in a little bit of professional advice, someone who can come and look at your land. And actually, you don't need to have a huge amount of land. It depends what size of vineyard you want to plant. It could just be a row of vines, up to acres and acres of them. It depends what you want to do with it. If you want to make a business out of it, then obviously you need to be a bit more commercial. But always, whatever size, it's always worth having someone who knows the land, knows the soil, and can actually assess it. And there's no regulation as such. Anybody can plant a vineyard, but we do urge people to become part of the community. And I can tell you what, there are some fantastic people who are in English and Welsh and Scottish now viticulture. They're very open, they're very helpful, they're very supportive. And the way we organise ourselves at Wine GB is that we have different regions. So you can join one of the regional vineyard associations and you're immediately part of a community, but you've got access to all that fantastic advice, hard-earned and probably over many years in some cases, and that is absolutely invaluable. There are certain regulations, particularly in the winemaking side of things, mm-hmm. and of course there are regulations in sprays and things like that and looking after your vines, but it's when you get to making your wine itself that there are some regulations governing certain standards of wine production. Obviously you've got food standards to adhere to as well, but the most important thing is it for many people it's a labor of love. It's a wonderful thing to you know, to have your own vineyard, but you've got to put the work in. And as I mentioned before, it's the long game as well.
Sure. Now, I suppose it's like taking coals to Newcastle when I say how popular is our wine abroad and where is it exported to? Because I guess historically more wine has been imported by this country because of our, shall we say, unpredictable climate. But as you've been explaining, we do quite a lot here now. So where is that exported to and how well does that go down generally?
That's a very good question, and actually it's something that's really growing in our industry at the moment, and it's actually very exciting to see. I think Brand Britain is very highly regarded, it's very respected, and we've found that we're selling more and more wines to places like the States and Japan. Actually, Scandinavia is also a very popular part of the world, Norway in particular, and it's wonderful to see. Now, food and drink is our biggest export, is Britain's biggest export. So it's wonderful to be part of something that's really proving to be so popular the world over. Even last year, when obviously there wasn't quite so much being exported, we saw a very good level, and we've seen it grow year on year, and it's definitely something that we're going to be doing more of as well. So, you know, it's an exciting time as people, you know, see this as another top-quality British product.
Now, you mentioned English Wine Week. What are your aims for English Wine Week, which begins tomorrow, and what will be happening during the week?
Oh, thank you so much for mentioning it. Yes, we're really excited about it. So English Wine Week is really a kind of movement. It's a celebration of English wines. It's just really to spread awareness and to encourage people, perhaps, when you're next going to a wine merchant or a supermarket, you know, why not think about picking up a bottle of English wine, sharing it with friends. There's nothing better than opening a bottle with friends, is there? And actually, of course, go and visit some vineyards, because there are so many now that are open to the public. And, you know, you had a lovely experience yourself.
Oh, it was fab.
Great.
I want to do it again.
Oh, well, there are many more, you know, that you can go and visit. And, of course, so many of them, you know, have different things that you can look forward to visiting. So we've got, you know, anything from guided tours, as you did yourself, self-guided, but some have restaurants, some have places to stay. We've got some wonderful places with accommodation. Or it could be a very small vineyard and you get to meet the family behind the wine, and that's absolutely fantastic. So
that was the one that I went to.
That's
right. I met the family who own it and run it, and we were escorted right through the vineyard and explained how it all works. There was only about six of us that did that, which was superb.
You get to hear the story, don't you?
Yes, that's right.
And the best thing is you get to taste a bit of wine at the end of it, which is
lovely.
And there's nothing better than, you know, when you go home and you've got a bottle from that vineyard, you'll remember that and you'll remember the story. And I personally think that makes a wine taste all the better. But you can find out a lot more about where to visit and all the sorts of things that are going on around the country, both online and actually in person. And that's on our website, which is, if it's okay to mention it.
Of course, please do.
winegb.co.uk. And you'll see the great big banner on the website and you'll see a roundup and events and things like that. And if you're, you know, those of you that are on social media, there's a lot happening on social media these days. We've been very active. And if you just, you know, use the hashtag English Wine Week, I think you'll pick up on an awful lot of chatter and a lot of great stuff going on. And I know for a fact that there are lots of lovely articles coming out in the national press, and there's going to be stuff on TV over the weekend. So keep an eye out, keep an ear out, and importantly, I should open up a bottle of English wine and enjoy it.
I think when I next need some wine and I'm in the supermarket, I'm going to be a little bit more choosy, and I shall examine the shelves closely to see what I can find in the way of English wines.
Oh, fantastic. Nice to be a bit patriotic, isn't it?
Absolutely. However we drink, we must always drink responsibly, of course.
Most certainly.
Julia Trustam-Eve, Head of Marketing at Wines GP, thank you very much for talking to Friday Night Clive. That is your lot for this episode. You can catch the programme live every Friday night on Black Country Radio from 8 p.m. If you like our podcast, please subscribe by heading to blackcountryradio.co.uk/podcast or wherever you get your podcasts from. See you very soon. This is a Black Country Radio podcast presented by Clive Payne and produced by Andy Caddick.